I want you to remember your first time walking in an empty school. Maybe some of you have never experienced this, but I know many of you are thinking of an early meeting, or a late practice, or that Saturday you stopped to pick up the homework you'd forgotten the day before. Of course, it doesn't really matter why you're there, because it all has the same strange effect. It's different, like running into your teacher on the weekend. You've primarily known this place as a student during school hours, when it's big and bright, full of loud voices and laughter, the sound of kids running through the hall. But now, it's quiet and dark, and you're alone. It's a little spooky. You're a kid, right? You're seeing the familiar in a strange light, starting to think about how this place has a life and a history of its own. And now you can't help but wonder who else, or what else, could be in the building with you in this exact moment, which is right when you hear it.
As we've discussed here before, schools in the Red River Valley have been host to more than their fair share of ghost stories. From unexplained fires in country schoolhouses to eerie giggling in campus dorms, our ghosts in the Great Plains seem to have an affinity for the classroom. Maybe it's a leftover of our Midwestern ethic for hard work and education. But some of these ghosts carry a little more weight in our local folklore, including one who's said to haunt North Fargo's Horace Mann neighborhood and elementary. A giant among legends, and at least when it comes to Fargo's circus of paranormal visitors, the elephant in the room. I'm Matt Hopper.
I'm Davin Waite.
And you're listening to Paranormal North.
The possibilities are unlimited.
In here with us.
Dim the lights if you wish.
You're listening to Paranormal North.
Welcome to Paranormal North, presented by Forum Communications and the Historical and Cultural Society of Clay County. Please support your local journalists and your local historians with a newspaper subscription or a museum membership today. This podcast takes a look at some of the stranger stories that feature into our history in and around the Red River Valley, from Dakota prairies to the lakes and forests of Minnesota, Manitoba, and Ontario.
We each work in local news and history, and over the years we've come across a lot of strange stories that blur the lines of fact and fiction. We're particularly interested in the paranormal trifecta: ghosts, aliens, and monsters. So if you have a story you'd like to share, or an area legend you'd like us to look into, let us know. Email us at paranormalnorthpodcast@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we're digging into the story of Ellie, who, according to legend, has lived large in neighborhood lore for roughly a century, stomping and trumpeting around the former circus grounds where Horace Mann Elementary was built in 1915. Matt, where do we begin an elephant ghost story?
We're going back to Fargo Moorhead in the summer of 1880, in the middle of the Great Dakota economic boom. At this point, Dakota Territory is 9 years from statehood. The Northern Pacific Railroad has nearly reached Montana after crossing the Red River from Minnesota 8 years earlier. And the NP's primary rival, James J. Hill's St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Manitoba Railroad, is laying the foundation for the great Northern Empire to come. There's still wild prairie in the Red River Valley, but it's going fast as railroad crews, city prospectors, immigrant homesteaders, and bonanza farmers from the Northeast pour in and plant it with king wheat. Population numbers give a sense of this growth. In 1870, 90 people lived in Clay County, Minnesota. 5 years later, there were 1,400. In 1880, there were 6,000. An even larger boom was taking form across the Red River. In 1870, there were nearly 2,400 people living in the northern half of Dakota Territory, mostly in Pembina County, and 10 years later, the number had grown to 37,000, clustered primarily around Fargo and Grand Forks. And in 1880, the twin cities of Fargo-Moorhead count a metro population of roughly 4,000 residents.
This is also the summer a young Teddy Roosevelt first ventures to the area, eager to see the Wild West and hunt the western wilderness that still remains, taking hundreds of birds and rabbits out of Clay County fields and sloughs with his brother Elliot and their friend Jack. Teddy would have to travel further west, as he did a few years later, to hunt the legendary bison that once roamed here. By 1880, they were a rarity in the Red River Valley. The sighting of one or two were published annually in local newspapers at this point, even though only 14 years earlier, in 1866, Clay County settler Randolph Probesfield counted a herd of roughly 10 to 100,000, 13 miles north of Georgetown. A herd so large that he and his party couldn't see its northern or western edges. Now, Teddy doesn't feature much into this story, but I include his trip to once again show that local wilderness was being rapidly pushed westward, northward, and to the brink of extinction. And in many ways, local indigenous folks like the Dakota, Ojibwe, and Métis were being pushed in the same directions. This is a time of tremendous change. However, we're also starting our story here in 1880, because this is the year that Fargo-Moorhead, in an ironic turn, starts importing wilderness. And I'm talking about the wild animals of the Sells Brothers Millionaire Confederation of Stupendous Railroad Shows. That's the real name, and it's the circus. Now, this was technically the second circus to come to town, following a visit from Dr. A.W. Hagar's Paris Circus in 1878. But what was special about the Sells Brothers' visit in 1880 was the menagerie, the exotic animals. In addition to the equestrians and acrobats and jugglers, clowns, and trapeze artists, the Sells Brothers' circus brought hippopotamus, dancing bears, a rhinoceros, sea lions, and a herd of elephants. And these elephants seem to have been the stars of the show, and they remain the stars of the show for decades, as circuses regularly visited Fargo-Moorhead in June and July on their regional railroad tours. Society pages and local newspapers were filled with folks announcing that they'd gone to Fargo to see the elephant.
These circuses included the likes of W.W. Coles, Lehman Brothers, Barnum & Bailey, local favorites the Ringling Brothers, and a handful of others who regularly changed names and merged with the competition. When the circus arrived in Fargo-Moorhead, as it did roughly 100 times between 1878 and 1915, which is the next important date in our story, it usually came on the railroad from performances the night or two before in Aberdeen, Wahpeton, Fergus Falls, Detroit Lakes, Grand Forks, Valley City, or Bismarck. The sizes of early circus crews ranged from 25 people up to several hundred, and the attractions, which were heavy on horses, frequently counted several hundred animals or more. When Barnum & Bailey's Greatest Show on Earth came to Fargo a few years later, in 1884, it came on 64 railroad cars, and the size of these circuses grew larger each summer. Folks were informed of the show's arrival by circus advertisers, or advancemen, as they were called, who traveled on trains and wagons weeks before the circus with lithographs, ink, newspaper copy, and big wooden barrels full of glue. Posters were printed and hung on fences, walls, and telegraph poles, both around town and in the surrounding rural areas. Circus lithographs were printed in newspapers as well, featuring intricate designs of animals and performers, and regularly highlighting the various acts as amazing, magnificent, or wonderful. sometimes the attractions were promoted by their apparent worth, like the Sells Brothers' $200,000 herd of elephants and the only $18,000 drove of performing Colorado cattle in the world.
Can you imagine having the only $17,000 drove of performing Colorado cattle of the world?
Just missed the mark. Sometimes they were promoted by their peculiarity, like the Bond Brothers Circus that claimed to tour a wild bovolopus, a supposed hippo-giraffe hybrid billed as the rarest, awfulest, mighty monster of the deep that just turned out to be a water buffalo. Or the Barnes' gigantic four-ring circus's galloping fish, which were just seals. Circuses would unload their wagons from rail cars and then unload their show into the wagons before riding off to the circus grounds on the edge of town. In Fargo-Moorhead, they generally set up on the town's edge to the north or west, as was occasionally the case in Fargo. Crews would unload and set up before embarking on their free promotional street parade around noon, and reports suggest that this was all a fairly quick process. Given the size of the production and payroll, circus performers were under great pressure to move through towns as fast as possible. When local newspapers like the Moorhead Daily News or the Fargo Daily Argus featured a promotional feature or preview, they'd occasionally remark on the rapid 10 to 15 minute setups of animal pens and perimeter tents.
These circuses regularly featured a hippodrome or racetrack where Wild West shows or biblical chariot races and processions were held. Satellite tents to exhibit museum curiosities, concessions, and freak shows, and the large big top tent, which featured between one and five rings of circus acts. These big tops really were big, too, even in the 19th century. They regularly stretched higher than 100 feet, and they could hold tens of thousands of people on wooden benches and bleachers around the circus rings. Several of these early circuses reported attendance that neared and even surpassed the local town population. Of course, there was a lot of exaggeration in this industry, and excited newspaper publishers of the time, many of them investors and town boosters, were prone to overestimate crowd size. However, given the opportunity to see something as rare as an elephant or a tiger or a mighty bovolopus, especially in a place with relatively little entertainment outside the home or saloon, we shouldn't be surprised that circuses could draw a crowd. When thunderstorms canceled performances, which they tended to do given the immense size and danger of the great tents, newspapers highlighted the unfortunate return trips of area farmers and laborers who had ridden their horses or wagons into nearby towns and then caught a train to Fargo for the show. It was a long, disappointing ride back, sometimes for thousands of would-be circus-goers.
The dangers of the circuses are probably pretty clear to most of us today. Excluding some number of child laborers, everything was big and heavy in the circus, from the animals to the tents, and performers and staff moved fast with few safety precautions in place. A few local tragedies help illustrate this. When John Robinson's 10 big shows combined arrived in Fargo on September 30th, 1885, it was in the middle of an ambitious local tour. The circus had already played Jamestown on September 26th, Valley City on September 28th, and Castleton on September 29th. It would then play Detroit Lakes on October 1st, Wadena on October 2nd, and Wahpeton on October 3rd. As the circus moved eastward for its Fergus Falls show, a train coupling broke, moving up the heavy grade and sending the last 10 cars flying downhill back to Breckenridge and the Red River before striking another train. The sleeper cars were on the back of this runaway section, so the crash ended up burying 100 people beneath the wreckage, wounding dozens and killing at least five. Another circus tragedy hit Wahpeton 12 years later in 1897 when lightning struck one of the Ringling Brothers' tent poles, killing two workers, Charles Smith and Charles Walters, and injuring a dozen more. A third victim, Charles Miller, died a year later from complications related to his Wahpeton injury. Along with the rest of the performers, the three had played Fargo only a week before. The circus repaired the tent in time for the afternoon show and then held a funeral and burial in Riverside Cemetery a mile south of town later that day. A stone monument shaped like a tent pole still stands in the cemetery, and circus workers today continue to pay homage to the men buried there when they perform in the community. 2 years later, the Ringling Brothers' Fargo show was canceled after their tent collapsed in a Crookston thunderstorm, injuring 60 people and crushing the arms or legs of at least four audience members. The circus was dangerous fun.
You can probably also imagine that the human performers and audience members weren't the show's only casualties. Animals regularly died on tour from illness and injury, occasionally from old age. And this brings us directly to Horace Mann Elementary. The school was built in 1915 on a development called Hector's Addition in Northeast Fargo, land that had been regularly used by visiting circuses. And according to quite a few folks, including my colleague Mark Peel, archivist at the Historical and Cultural Society of Clay County, the stories and the sightings and the strange sounds started roughly 15 years later in the 1930s. Horace Mann students, staff, and neighborhood residents started sharing stories about stomping in the school's hallways, which upon investigation, always proved to be nothing. Some reported trumpeting sounds like those an elephant would make. Others claimed to see the creature, sometimes opaque and sometimes translucent, in the school windows, and students would search for bones in the playground. At least some of these sightings were driven by the belief that large bones had indeed already been found near Horace Mann. Neighborhood lore suggested that these bones had been discovered when the school's foundation was dug. Workers initially thought that they belonged to a dinosaur, but they proved to be an elephant. And in disturbing the grave, they woke the ghost. Others claimed that neighborhood kids had seen frantic circus workers burying a dead elephant years before in the muddy ground where Horace Mann was later constructed.
These legends have become a defining feature of the neighborhood and prompted some interesting stories in local media. We've heard allusions to earlier published accounts, but as far as we can tell, the Horace Mann elephant doesn't really show up in local newspapers until Halloween in 1998, when Forum reporter Patrick Condon wrote a piece called Phantom of the Circus. Steve Tollefson, Horace Mann's head janitor, is introduced as the self-appointed curator of the legend, and quoted saying, "There's no argument in my mind whether the elephant was buried, it's where it's buried." In October of 2001, this question came up in a conversation at Ralph's Bar in Moorhead, prompting the elephant's next feature in local news. John Lamb, editor of the High Plains Reader, published a cover story on a lighthearted but dedicated search mission called the Pachyderm Recovery Project, which was the brainchild of Dan Molly, an assistant planner with the city of Fargo at the time, and James Wendt, a graduate student finishing up his master's in archaeology. Molly had recently moved into the Horace Mann neighborhood and learned of the elephant from Kevin Carville, a former Forum reporter and Byron Dorgan staffer, locally famous for his North Dakota library and his role planning Zip to Zap in 1969. Molly and Wendt conducted research, including more than 50 interviews with Horace Mann residents, and initially hoped to excavate any remaining bones of the elephant, which they've also affectionately named Ellie. However, their plans changed as the project grew, as Wendt recounted like this. More reflection has changed our theoretical spin on it. It would still be interesting to find out if it is physically there, but I wouldn't want to exhume it now. The more we thought about it, the more we became interested not in just the physical existence, but why the story survives. What that story does for the community. It must serve a function if it's still around 80 to 100 years later. That's what we're interested in.
Lisa Kroll produced a feature story for WDAY TV News on the Horace Mann elephant shortly after the HPR piece, offering an overview of the legend as told by local students, and reiterating Molly and Wendt's perspectives on what had become an in-depth dive into folklore and mythology. 5 years later, Dave Ropke included a brief version of it in a local Tall Tales feature for the Fargo Forum, as did Kia Farhang in 2014. However, it was a different researcher that year who picked up the elephant mantle. Jack Dura, a sophomore at NDSU at the time, learned of the Pachyderm Recovery Project and decided that he would continue the search, needing a new research subject following some genealogical work he'd been conducting. In May of 2014, he placed an announcement in HPR under the headline Horace Mann Pachyderm Info that read as follows. Seeking information on the legend of the Horace Mann circus elephant, knowledgeable individuals are encouraged to call Steve Tollefson or Jack Dura. Along with some help from Mark Peel, who found the ad and responded with a letter, Jack ultimately discovered some interesting history, and though neither he nor Mark could confirm an elephant burial near Horace Mann, the developing story took an interesting turn in another HPR piece published that November, a turn with a paper trail that begins to pinpoint actual hole-in-the-ground graves.
The following news brief comes from the Thursday, July 14th, 1900 issue of the Moorhead Weekly News, reprinted from the Fargo Morning Call. Last night, as the animals of the Forepaw and Sells Brothers show were being loaded on the train, a camel got loose of his fastenings and strolled over to where the champion elephant was eating hay. The visit was resented by the elephant, who landed on the camel's hump with his trunk, and before the camel caught his breath, he soaked him another that sent the ship of the desert to the camel heaven. The death of the camel is a costly experience to the show people. So, no dead elephant, but maybe enough of a connection and enough evidence to point us closer to the source of the legendary Horace Mann elephant grave and ghost. So is this the origin of the legend? Could a ghost camel be haunting Horace Mann? Or is it an elephant spirit tortured by the murder of its camel friend that fateful Fargo night?
Well, strangely enough, there's something else to consider. Because it turns out, there's an elephant grave too. Except it's in Devil's Lake. And here I'm reading from the July 12, 1945 issue of the Fargo Forum and Daily Tribune, in a story titled Arthur Brothers Circus Here Minus Huge Pachyderm. The 45-year-old elephant, suffering from blood poisoning, was put out of its misery by a shot from the hypodermic needle when all hope of her recovery was gone. The dead animal, which lost a ton of her 5-ton weight during a 6-week illness, was buried Wednesday in a tractor-dug grave at Devil's Lake. It all started with a broken toenail. The circus arrived here on its own train over the Great Northern Line.
Okay, so we started with a ghost and we ended with a grave. So is this the end of the story? Are we putting it to bed?
You know what? I don't think that's up to us. This legend seems to have some legs.
And a trunk.
Ba-dooch. For those of you listening, let us know if you dig up something different.
Well, thanks again for listening. That wraps up today's story. A lot of our research today came from Forum Communications. If you subscribe to Inform Today, you can access forum archives and get access to unlimited content across more than 20 Midwest news sites. It's a great way to support local journalism.
Much of our research also came from the Historical and Cultural Society of Clay County, who direct the Yemkamp Center Museum in Moorhead, including Clay County's collections and archives. Stop in at the museum and consider a membership to support local history.
And if you have a story you'd like to share with us or something you'd like us to investigate, feel free to contact us. If it's paranormal, true crime, or just plain weird, contact us at paranormalnorthpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also keep track of what we're working on by following us on Instagram. Just search for Paranormal North Podcast. Look out for more episodes involving the truly strange, deeply rooted in Minnesota and North Dakota coming soon. Until then, I'm Matt Hopper.
And I'm Davin Waite. Catch us next time on Paranormal North.
Theme music and outro created by Witch, Witch, Witch.